If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have a little bit longer than normal episode, and it's because it's a really intriguing episode. We're going to be talking with the guys from Annihilator Broadheads, and the cool thing about this podcast is that their product kind of breaks the definition of what a broadhead is and the design. You look at it, it doesn't look anything like a traditional broadhead, whether that's mechanical or fixed blade, and the science behind the product is very cool as well. So today we're going to be talking with the founders of the company. We're going to be talking about how this idea kind of popped up at a camp where a guy was talking about, man, I wish I didn't lose this bull elk that I shot. How do we fix this broadhead problem? Blah, blah, blah. Out comes this idea for Annihilator, and then the whole conversation from concept to prototype to, you know, testing to, you know, bringing it to market and educating people on why it's different, why it's potentially better than all the other broadheads on the market. And it's a really awesome episode. I love breaking down the whole process of the company and, you know, from start to finish, from where they started to where they are today, and why these guys have, you know, such passion behind their products, because they really believe, and there is some science to back up their what they believe. Of how they feel that it's a superior broadhead than anything else on the market, how different it is and how it performs. So we talk about all that today, right? A really awesome episode. I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get into today's episode, let's talk about Tethered. You know, if you're looking for a saddle, if you're looking for platforms, if you're looking for climbing sticks, if you're looking for saddle accessories, head on over to Tethered's website and take a look at all their product lines. Man, they have something for everybody. Also, on their website, YouTube channel, all that stuff, they have information about how you can use their products to be more successful and how it's a tool, not necessarily the secret recipe, but a tool to help you in your, to achieve your goal of potentially, let's just say, killing a big buck or getting in tighter on a big buck or things like that. So go check out Tethered. Hunt Stand, I'll tell you this. I always talk a lot about what I am familiar with, and that's like hunting, the hunting aspect of it. But there's so much more to Hunt Stand than just the hunting side of it. If you're a fisherman and you want to document, you know, where on the water you are finding fish, you can do that too, right? I mean, it's just not limited to the hunting side of thing. I mean, it's called Hunt Stand, but there's so much more you can do with it. You can, you know, plan out food plots. You can highlight certain areas where you want to maybe do some habitat work in the spring or in the fall or whatever, knock some trees out, hinge cut areas, design bedding areas. All that stuff can be done on Hunt Stand. Document trail camera pictures, right? You can save and manage your trail camera pictures. All that stuff can be done on Hunt Stand. So it's not just your typical hunting app. It goes much deeper than that. And for the price of this is only like $30. I think it's $30 a year, an entire year. The functionality that comes with that $30 outweighs any other app on the market. And that's why Hunt Stand is the most popular hunting app. So go check out huntstand.com. If you want a discount, enter the discount code SN20 for 20% off. And lastly, we have Annihilator Broadheads, right? And so I'm not necessarily going to do a full ad on this, but listen closely when they start talking about the wound channels, right? And really, that's all we want our broadheads to do is just destroy everything they hit. So listen closely today when these guys start talking about their wound channels and how much damage they do. So if you want to find out more, go visit the Annihilator Broadhead website, annihilatorbroadheads.com, and then listen to this episode today, right? So awesome episode. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I feel like it's a really good start to finish. You really get to know the brand and the people behind it. And that's what the goal of this podcast is. So hopefully you guys enjoy. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. Today I am joined by Micah Brown and Brandon Brody of Annihilator Broadheads. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing
Thanks
good.
For having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm doing good, man. I tell you what, we have a period of time in Iowa. I'm from Eastern Iowa. And so right now, it's odd outside. It's like the perfect weather. It almost feels like California, no humidity outside this morning. And all I really wanted to do is sit outside and drink coffee in the shade and like just enjoy. There's no humidity. There's no humidity outside right now. And I'm pretty jacked about that. Where are you guys located?
Boise, Idaho.
Boise, Idaho. What's the humidity like in Boise, Idaho?
Dry, very dry. So we're like
sub-zero.
Yeah.
Very, very dry.
Yeah. Have you guys been hit with any of the Western wildfires this year in the last couple of years?
Yeah, Idaho will get some bad fires. Not as bad as California and Oregon, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and my wife were out in Oregon last summer. We went and enjoyed the Willamette Valley. You know, all the wine areas out there. And and there was smoke in the air the whole time. You couldn't, yeah. And there was days where you couldn't see anything. So, I mean, at least you guys aren't, I mean, is the smoke coming your guys' way at all?
Yeah, we get it all the time during, especially during season. As you get later into the summer, as Western hunters, primarily, pretty much, you know, every other year, it seems like we're elk hunting in smoke or blacktail hunting in smoke. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think too, people don't realize, and it's funny. I just moved up here from California last year.
Oh, okay.
And people don't realize that, this whole Boise Meridian, you know, this whole Treasure Valley area is not that far from, like, not that far from Oregon, not that far from Nevada. So anything that happens as far as wildfires, it just comes and just sits in here and dumps into this little basin. And you, like last summer, there was days when you couldn't see the Boise Mountains, and those aren't real. I mean, you can see them right now, right next to us. So
yeah, man, I was out in I was out in Nebraska last year, and on one of the last days of our hunt, a wildfire broke out in western Nebraska, and me and the guy we were getting alerts on our phone, and they, you know, be careful for wildfire. And so the next morning we were waking up, and I thought it was snowing, but it was ash from the wildfire dumping down on us. And so I was like, man, this is crazy. And how fast those things can spread is ridiculous.
Yeah. So, you know, I was from California. So I blacktail hunt, quite a bit. We'll go back again this year. I took Brandon in a couple years back to blacktail hunt there. And last year I actually got kicked out, when I was hiking in, I saw a bunch of guys with, you know, the Forest Service guys with helmets on. And so I went and talked to them, and I had all my gear on my back and everything. And they basically were like, hey, we're clearing all of this forest right here. They're basically going to shut down everything. So you need to pack up and scoot. And yeah. I wasn't like really close, but I mean, 10 to 15 miles. I mean, those things can move so fast. So, oh, yeah. I mean, I get it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Knock on wood, I don't have to deal with much of that stuff here in Iowa. You know, the occasional ditch fire because a tractor, you know, leaks something, or, you know, maybe a garbage, you know, someone's burning garbage in a ditch and it gets out of control, but it's put down pretty quick. We don't typically have those fires, here in Iowa. So Annihilator Broadheads. All right. You guys, how old is this company?
2019.
Okay. 2019, you guys launched.
That's when we went to market. It was May of 2019 at the NFAA shoot in Reading. And first customers got their product in, like, what was it, Micah? First week in June, I think.
Yeah, I think we weren't even selling them then. I think it was about a month. Yeah, because that Reading shoot is always the first weekend in May.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was about a month.
Okay. So launch is roughly May 2019, but there's a whole bunch of other things that have to happen before you get to launch, right?
Right.
So Let's talk a little bit about that. I want to find out from you guys, what was the birth of Annihilator? Like, there had to be an idea that popped up in one of your guys' heads that was like, I got an idea for a broadhead. Why don't you explain what that moment was like and what was running through your head?
Yeah, sure. I'll just say, Brandon, I'll take this one. So Brandon can speak to his background if we go down that road. But I was a cop for 16 years in Sacramento County as a sheriff, and hunted a lot. Bow hunted first, obviously started off rifle hunting, and then immediately went to bow hunting after that. And just coming, you know, we were sitting in camp at an elk camp, where I didn't know Brandon, and we both had a mutual friend. Our mutual friend obviously knew me, and then he knew Brandon. So that was kind of the triangle how Brandon and I met. But sitting in camp, a buddy of ours lost and this is a true, like, campfire story. So a buddy of ours had lost a bull, and we were just sitting around and talking about what things you could do, what things you couldn't do, what, you know, what type of products would make that scenario less unfortunate. And I actually had a design that I'd been working on for a couple of years. In the meantime, before that, and we were sitting there talking, and I actually had the design, and I came out and showed them. I actually had it in with me in elk camp, and Brandon always laughs because he's like, who carries around this stuff? And
hey guys, you want to see something cool?
Yeah, but I mean, in my defense, doing the cop thing, I always had. Always had stuff with me. I worked for part of a little intelligence unit. So always had my backpack on me in case I needed to make phone calls when I got reception or anything like that. So we ended up just talking about it. I showed them the design, and I think everyone that was there was thrilled by it. And I think Brandon ended up calling me about 3 weeks later, and we had texts back and forth. Hey, you know, nice meeting up, that kind of thing. And then he had called me like 3 weeks later and asked me about basically the possibility of doing something with it, and just saying, hey, it'd be kind of cool. And I have a background in entrepreneurship, software, and he had software side and stuff like that he can talk about. But yeah, that was like the initial kickoff to what what and how Annihilator started. So
yeah, so talk to me about that initial design, right? I mean, you just, because there's something that happened before that. You can't just show someone a design on a napkin like you were carrying around there. I'm assuming there was some thought process before that you started, you know, rattling around in your brain. You know, what led to you coming up and saying, dude, I got this idea for a broadhead?
Yeah, you look at broadheads, and I've been shooting them for a while, and you look at all of them, and they're literally all the same. It doesn't matter if they change the tip. It doesn't matter if the blades come swinging out of the ferrule or whatever. They're pretty much, it's not knocking broadhead companies. Brandon and I are super respectful. We don't, you know, never want to bash or talk about another broadhead in a negative way. But there's nothing that held like a bulbous back end that would hit very similar to what a bullet does, right? A bullet, when it mushrooms, it actually creates a void behind it. So in my head, I thought that if the back end of this could be bulbous and hide the arrow shaft, we could definitely disrupt flesh on the way in, unlike anything on the market. So, in my head, it's funny, in the drawing, it looks totally two-dimensional, exactly how it is. But when Brandon and I started talking, I was like, it's got to have this base, and this base will be triangular, and I wish I could draw it for you, but I'm not a CAD guy. So that was like the theory behind it, would be basically if you could merge what a broadhead typically does by hemorrhaging with what a bullet kind of does by moving mass, obviously not tearing and disrupting flesh at those speeds. But if you could create a void, I was like, well, maybe the wound channel wouldn't collapse, even on submarginal hits. It's going to stay open because that back bell would disrupt so much flesh on the way in. The wound channel wouldn't be able to close like a traditional broadhead.
Gotcha. Okay. So then you go to camp, blah, 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 conversation. Brandon, why the follow-up call?
Yeah, so I worked in the software industry and for a long time, it just kind of got old, to be honest with you. Yeah. And I was looking for something to get my hands on that was physical, that wasn't like just sitting in front of a desk, and not trying to get out of the industry, but I was thinking, man, I need some like side projects. I got, you know, the software world is awesome, and it's fun. You get to innovate, and we constantly were creating new. I was a solutions architect and VP of a company, and so constantly creating and innovating, but it seemed like nobody was ever happy, because you. It's like you're just always changing, right? So you just work towards like one big push to get a product out. People are happy for maybe a week, and then they're like, oh man, I wish it was better here. Here's my 500 changes. And then you go build a new product, and then you got to go sell that. And it's just this like constant cycle of build, measure, learn, and sell.
Yeah.
And build, measure, learn is not a bad cycle. Don't get me wrong. It's just I don't know. I wanted something physical, do something physical with my hands. And so when he had, I was already thinking about that. Actually, 6 months prior, I told my wife, I said, man, I really need a side project. I want to do something different, because my background was, my degree was entrepreneurial management. And I had helped a few companies and, you know, lots of opportunities, but nothing really came into my mind for a product. And I did a year at the Art Institute of Seattle in basically 3D design. It's called industrial design. So from model making, car designs, to jewelry, to furniture. So I had that kind of desire. And when he shared that he had this idea, all I heard was he had an idea. He was a cop. There's no way for him to really take that idea and bring it to market. And when he shared the idea, I thought it would be a shame not to at least test it and see if it has legs.
Yeah.
But for me, it was more of a desire to just have a side project that said, let's go through the, I actually wanted the education on it. I told my wife, I said, I'm willing to spend X amount of dollars to go get a, basically a, an education to help bring and get an idea out of someone's head.
Yeah.
On, not just onto paper, but into a CAD model and into, you know, prototyping stage, and then just see if it has legs. I didn't really understand the shape. I mean, him and I talked and I understood the concept for sure. In fact, the way my brain thought about it was when you take a rock and you drop it in water, you know, how water would flow around the rock. And I was thinking that in terms of how something would fly, because we knew it would kill. I mean, the second you have something that's a large surface area, the question is can you just get it to pass through an animal at that speed, and can you get it to fly?
Yeah.
Those are the two things we didn't really know. Now, we knew it would kill. Now, would it kill and create lethality that's actually above and beyond your standard, like, razor blade cut and pencil hole? Well, that was to be determined, but it seemed in our heads pretty easily that that was kind of a no-brainer. Like, yeah, dude, you know this is going to punch a hole. You know this is going to create a wind channel that at least doesn't close and literally core out stuff.
Yeah.
But does it fly and will it penetrate? And what happens when you hit bone and submarginal shots and all that stuff?
Yeah.
So I said, let's go make this thing, man. And we just called it a project. It wasn't Annihilator Broadheads. It wasn't anything. It was just a side project.
And, yeah.
You know, he agrees, like, yeah, man, let's go do it. And that was my passion, is I just wanted to go and get and help somebody get something out of their head and then physically see it and shoot it and then go, well, now what?
Yeah.
And that process was super fun. And once we got there, I think Micah and I, there was a couple turning points for us. If you want to get into it, I remember we made a plastic model, and it's always good to make a plastic model of whatever you have, just to hold it in your hand and go,
like,
hey,
a 3D print. Was it like a 3D print? Yeah.
Yep. So we're holding this 3D print in our hand, and we're looking at it. We're making sure the size feels good and it looks aesthetically pleasing. And we're like, man, this is awesome. We freaking love this thing. But then you go, well, how the hell do I shoot this out of a bow?
Yeah.
Well, I can't. So I really have to make, we have to make that decision of, all right, do we invest the money to go make this out of metal, you know, and which is not a cheap decision. So, you know, at that point it was no longer educational. It was like, okay, I think it would be a shame not to move forward from here. This is so cool. And we're having a lot of fun doing this. And so the question was, is does it fly and will it penetrate? That was the two, like, first litmus test, right? And so I remember.
Just one second. Yeah. Because so you get the 3D model, right? And then it becomes commitment time, and it's time to actually get it machined and get it into a product that will actually do harm to an animal. I mean, because that's the goal. Yep. That's the goal of a broadhead, is to kill whatever it hits. So yep. How long, you know, from that follow-up phone call after deer camp till you had a actual machined prototype that you could put on an arrow and launch?
I want to say it was about 6 months. What do you think, Micah?
Yeah, somewhere in there, maybe just a touch longer. It definitely wasn't a year.
Right.
Was,
yeah. So yeah. That time frame, you know, from a hey new friend may seem long, but man, from a manufacturing and getting a prototype of an actual product, to me, that's a very short period of time.
Yeah. And bear in mind that was like product one, right?
Right. Prototype one. Yeah.
Yeah. It just to get out and shoot it. Now, we can go down the process and talk about how many iterations we did, which
weren't a lot, which is pretty cool. But yeah, you're right. It's a short period of time to go from idea to execution and having an actual prototype in your hand.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if you know what you're doing and you like today, we can prototype in a matter of weeks, you know, and go from zero to new concept ready for R&D testing fast, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So you get this first prototype out and what was the reaction when you sent the first prototype downrange?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I, at least for me, Mike and I lived in different areas, so we didn't, it kind of sucked. And it's kind of funny if you go back, Micah, and you think about it, like you and I had no concept of, like we weren't able to really build off of each other except on phone calls. Like we didn't get to shoot it together. His test was different than my test. I took the flight test. He took the wound channel test. And he can talk about his side of it. But I remember I shot day one. I'm trying to think if I think first shot was like 40 yards. And it was like right with field points. I mean, it was like boom, boom. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then it was like third shot was like 75, I think. It might have been 80. I can't remember exactly. But it was a poke, you know,
mm-hmm.
And right with field points. Now, obviously, my bow is tuned. I can shoot, you know. But I think that's when I just set my bow down and I was like, how? How is it doing that?
Yeah.
Like, because it has more surface area. It shouldn't do that. I actually thought, and I told Micah this in the beginning, I thought, all we have to do is get it to 50 yards. Like, if it hits 50 yards, it's over. Like, this is going to be a game changer. And then I sat there and we sent it long range, and I'm like, dude, This is going to be lights out. If guys can actually shoot this at long range and there's little tune, and I shot it with target vanes.
Yeah.
I was shooting those old AAE 2.3 Plastifletch vanes. You know, they're like 0.4 high and 2.3 inches long in a 3-fletch.
Yeah.
And it's not like it was a big broaded vane, you know, and it was like four shots in, you know.
Yeah.
And I sat there, I was like, this is awesome. And Micah and I will tell you, like, we care about flight a lot. Like,
yeah.
We told each other if these things are not easy to tune and you can't fly at long range, you know, it's really not ideal. But the 50 yard mark would be like the make or break. Like if they don't shoot at 50 yards, then what's the point?
Yeah. So I hear that story, and that's awesome for a guy who, you know, the less tuning you have to do for a broadhead, the better. That's better for everybody. So that's awesome that it turned out that way. As a hunter, right, I hear that and I go, that's awesome, but I'm used to tuning my broadheads anyway. I know that when I go from field points, I'm always checking to make sure. I want to know if this kills shit, okay? I want to know if it destroys whatever it hits, marginal, you know, double lung, heart, whatever the shot is, what's the penetration like? Am I going to feel confident with this head once I start hunting with it? So what were those initial wound channel tests
like? Yeah. So I'll speak to that. Brandon got the flight part out of the way.
Yeah.
And let's just jump real quick into what we thought about in designing a broadhead, and we kind of call them, you know, four pillars.
Yeah.
There's four things that every broadhead should strive to accomplish, and it would make it, across the board, those four pillars would make it in our minds. If you can excel in those areas, you'd have something completely unique. So, in our minds going forward with the broadhead, we felt that every broadhead out on the market, like I said, not knocking broadheads, they fell short in one or sometimes even two or three categories. So those categories are flight, penetration, durability, and lethality. So Brandon talked about flight. I'll talk about durability because that was the second test.
Real quick.
Yep.
Where do you feel that some of the other broadheads of those four pillars, where do they fall short in your opinion?
Because we're Western guys and we designed this to, you know, our thought process was to launch this thing long range. If it wouldn't fly long range, then it was one of those things we'd have to work through it. So
gotcha.
The first one is usually flight.
Gotcha.
Without a guide, and you already mentioned it. You hit right on it. Most guys, especially shooting fixed blade broadheads, even out of a tuned bow out to distance, they have to adjust something, whether that's their arrow rest or their sight or something else. They usually, you know, knock tuning and doing all this stuff and making sure their vanes align with the broadhead. You know, you can go down the rabbit hole.
Right.
But, that's flight, right? And then usually durability. I mean, there's no, you know, you can't reuse broadheads, right? That's really not an option up until the Annihilator,
right?
Where you shoot it through 300 times through a car hood and all it's doing is taking the paint off the oxidation rust prohibitive off the side of the broadhead and maybe just nicking the blade edges a little bit. You know, and then penetration. A lot of people, you know, you can't deny that with a mechanical broadhead, when it hits shoulder, especially on quartering two shots, because you have blades that are swinging out and actually causing an event to happen inside the animal when it hits something hard, they usually deflect, bend, or warp, which take the broadhead on a plane, not on a plane trajectory, not intended where it was shot from. So, and you know, like I said, we can go down the rabbit hole, and those are just a few that is common in the bow hunting industry, right? Everyone talks about at least those. I mean, those are like the core.
Right. Okay. So,
on something real quick related to that, deflection is related to durability, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. So, when we say durability, it's not just the reusable factor of the broadhead. It's the factor of when I hit a scapula or even the ball joint on an animal, if that broadhead changes its shape at all, it will change the trajectory that you sent it on.
Right.
It has to, right? So what we wanted is a rigid, stout broadhead that would continue on the path you sent it on so that energy transfer can be efficient into the target and continue to blow straight through. And that is going to give you greater forgiveness. And so it's not always about the edge retention's good, you know, all of that, but it's also about not deflecting as much.
Yeah.
Hence why our broadhead is short side to side, but we have more, our broadhead is shorter side to side than almost every broadhead out there, but yet we have more cutting surface area than a 3-inch mechanical.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So back to the wound channel test.
Yep. So I, Brandon did his flight test and called me and I said, oh, that's sweet, man. I've only been able to get up to shoot it to about 30 or 40 yards for me. And, you know, I was shooting a lot of NFA tournaments and stuff like that. So I was, you know, kind of tuned up and, you know, shooting good and stuff. And it was legitimately spot on for me, out in my property and no issues at all. And it was absolutely pounding the target. But one thing I noticed when I shot it, I'd called Brennan and I said, did you see how easy it is to pull out of the target? We didn't know that. I knew that the belt was moving mass in the back of the broadhead, but we didn't know that it actually at the same time was building up zero friction on the arrow shaft as far as heating up the material. And I was shooting into a dense, like at the time, I think it was like a Reinhardt target.
Yeah.
And none of the foam was stuck to the arrow shaft, like with field points or other broadheads I had shot. And if you notice on our broadhead, the back cutting edges are on there as well. So it literally pulls out. I mean, it pulls out of the target super easy.
Yeah.
Easier than any other broadhead I had shot before. So that was one of the kind of quirky, unique things that I noticed. But what I did is I went and got I called Brian and I said, hey, man, I said, we can shoot it through plywood and stuff. I said, it'd be kind of cool to see what it does to metal, because you know metal doesn't move back out of the way once you strike it. It usually stays in the, whether you hit it with a hammer or whatever, it usually stays in the same you know stagnant shape after it's shot. So I said, hey, there's a company that's not too far from me, about 50 minutes. I said they sell these pretty durable thick steel drums. I said I'm gonna go pick one up. So I jammed down, picked one up, and I end up you know, shooting at 20 yards, with, like I said, up against a couple different style broadheads, hybrids and two blades and stuff. But, one thing I noticed when we shot the Annihilator was, the material that was moved, it legitimately looked like a huge triangle. It wasn't like the other ones where it was a field point with little razor blade slits. And not only that, when I shot it, it went through the steel drum so fast, it went over my neighbor's, our fence, which is like a horse fence, it took me like 30 minutes to find it. It went through so fast and out the other side that it seemed to me like it didn't even, and I remember telling Brandon, I said, it didn't even want to slow down. And I was shooting this, I had a barrel slightly up on a hill. So I was shooting kind of like eye height. And so it went, you know, it was about three feet off the ground is where I was shooting, like, you know, not uphill or downhill, because I wanted to see the true kind of trajectory of how it hits, you know,
right,
almost perfectly perpendicular to the drum. So, and then the other thing I noticed too, when I grabbed the arrows from the other broadheads, the carbon, two of them were snapped, and then the fletchings were completely destroyed on every one that I shot through the drum. When I grabbed the one that had the annihilator on it, it literally looked like it hadn't even been shot, other than the fact that the prototype was like 300 series metal. It was, I mean, totally, you know, really weak metal that we prototyped with. And the edges were a little bit chewed up, but I noticed that the fletchings literally looked like I glued them on yesterday.
Yeah.
And I remember telling Brandon, I'm like, dude, this arrow is completely fine behind this broadhead. All the other ones are absolutely trash.
Yeah. So you guys are gaining some confidence in this product as you start to do your testing.
Yeah. And those are preliminary tests, right?
Right. So right.
We knew that we were taking it with a grain of salt too. And the ultimate test is animals. And, you know, for your listeners out there, just to be clear, we took 2.5 years of testing before this thing went to market, of going through animals and really putting it through hell.
Yeah, but let's not kid ourselves. Animals aren't built like steel drums, right?
Exactly.
So so they're made
but,
of.
But
soft.
what they do have though is they have elasticity, yeah, in their skin and hide that comes back. So in our eyes, when I shot that, I instantly shot that with the other ones. I instantly, like, the light bulb went off, and I thought to myself, this wound channel, it's not going to close.
Yeah.
Like, you're just disrupting too much flesh on the way in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but what this does tell you is it tells you the next step is animals, right?
But correct.
So before you get going out and hunting and killing animals with it, did you have to make any tweaks to the actual design or the material that you use?
We did.
Not when that was shot. No.
Gotcha. Okay.
That was with 100.
For a 125.
Yes.
For a 125, you had to make some adjustments.
Yeah. So the 125, we wanted people to be able to switch in between the two, have the same flight characteristics. Everything that we're like, okay, how can we make this one the same as this one, but it's just in weight? And that's how we are now. Our original heads, 100 and 125, have the same exact footprint. It's just that the weight's in the shank. Now you go to our XLs, they're exact same, but the weight's in the shank. So when we first had the 125, it was really, really cool. It was kind of like archaic. It looked like something a Spartan would put on the end of their spear. It was like what we have now, but stretched out. So it was quite a bit longer.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the schematics are just a little bit different.
Correct.
All right. Cool. All right. It's time. It's animal time. Talk to us about what that process looked like. I mean, did you guys go right out into hunting out of your backyard? Or I've heard certain broadhead companies, they'll just go, dude, let's go on a hog hunt and let's just kill a whole bunch of hogs. Like, what did that animal killing process look like for you guys?
Well, I'm going to let Micah tell the story, only because he was the one who got to do the first set of animals. But I'll say this, the idea of testing is large sample size, right?
Right.
So, Micah and I, being Western hunters, it's not like you get tags all the time.
Exactly.
And so you definitely got to reach out to others to get some assistance, especially those that you know are straight killers and can get it done.
Right.
So that was our mindset, is let's go find some killers, you know, that we trust, you know, that we can keep this hush hush about. and really test this thing. So that'll also give us honest feedback.
Right.
Yeah. So I'll talk about the first animal that was harvested, and then Brandon, why don't you, when I'm done with that one, why don't you jump in and talk about Evan, our buddy Evan Obra in Hawaii.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I was in California, and I got a good buddy of mine that lives down in Paso Robles, and everybody that that knows about pig hunting in the Western United States, barring going over to Hawaii, the wine country from Napa all the way down to Santa Barbara, is without a doubt phenomenal pig hunting. It's just, they have the terrain, they have the heat, the basically what pigs like. They don't have to go uphill steep real bad. During the day when it's hot, they can go get in brush, and then at nighttime it cools down like literally into the 40s and 50s. It'll swing in the middle of summer like 60 degrees. And that's ideally what those pigs like. So they can get out and feed early morning. People, you know, a lot of pigs aren't like deer. They can't handle that heat running around, so they need to go bed up super early. So yeah, I ended up contacting a buddy of mine down in Paso Robles. Went down and stayed with him and kind of said, hey, look, I got this idea, and we, you know, I'm going to bring this thing down. He said, bring it down. We'll, you know, we'll see if we can't get it done. So him and I went out on one morning. He had a couple in his quiver, and I had a couple in mine. Keep in mind that when Brandon and I did this, I think Brandon, we talked to somebody yesterday about it. I believe we got like 7 and 7 apiece, 7 105s, 7 100. Yeah. So I think between the two of us, we had 14 broadheads to out of the gate to like, let's go test these things. So, went down there with my buddy. Like I said, we were on some pigs. I went around one end. He went up over the hill where these pigs end up trying to beat the heat, you know, in the early part of the morning. And they string line and go up over this hill and then bed down in this brush. So I come around the corner and I see him kind of like looking around, kind of moving. And I was thinking, okay, the pigs must be gone, because there's no way that's right where they normally go. So there's no way he's up, you know, crashing around for no reason. So I end up going over there and talking to him, and he said, you see anything? I said, yeah. I said, they burned by, they must've went right by you. You know, I didn't, they cut me off, or I tried to cut them off. They ended up going behind me. And for people that don't know about hogs, once those things get those little legs get moving and they know where they're going, they're gone quick. So he ends up, he's like, yeah, I saw one, you know, when it went over this way. And he was pointing, and I noticed that he had some blood on his hand. And I reached out and I grabbed his hand, and I was like, and I looked at him and I was like, dude. And he's like, yeah, I shot one. And I was like, awesome, cool. And he's like, I shot one with the annihilator. And I was like, no way. So like, you know, we're sitting there talking about it. He tells me about the shot process. He's like, dude, the closest I could get is like 52 yards. It, you know, I shot it and went right underneath this fence, over there. And he's got a point. He had backed out like to 70 or 80 yards away from the fence. And he said, I can tell you one thing. He said, it literally sounded like someone exploded a Coke can with the baseball bat when it hit. He said, so I know I didn't miss it. And I think it was, like a 52-yard shot.
Yeah.
So we end up going to the spot where he shot it, and the ground's tore up. You can tell where the pigs have been going up and down underneath this barbed wire fence. And right where he shot it, there was blood on the ground. And he said it was standing right here, perfectly broadside. And he said, I tried to hold it close to the shoulder. And I said, okay, did you pick up your arrow? And he said, no. He said my lighted nock. You can see it back there. And the lighted nock was probably, oh, I'd say 8 to 10 yards past the pig, but not just like laying there. It was like wedged. I had to pull it out of the ground and out of the bushes. So you could tell, like I said, when I picked it up, I could tell that, you know, it hammered him hard, but it also went through him really easily.
Yeah.
Based on how the arrow is positioned. So then we're just sitting there looking at the blood trail, and I look up and I said, you went underneath the fence? And he's like, yeah, I ran into the fence right here. So I look up through the fence about 5 yards and then over to the right about maybe 8 yards, somewhere in there, 7 yards, 8 yards. And the pig's laying there. So the pig ran a total of about 13 or 14 yards and was piled up like completely sideways. I saw little black and white patches. And I said, is that the little black and white one right there? And he's like, yeah, he said, I think it was tan a little bit and a little bit of black and white patches. So you could see it from right where he shot it. So it didn't, it literally made it maybe from 13 to 20 yards total, depending on, you know, the angle it went around the trees. So we walked up to it, and the first thing I noticed was it had a massive pile of bubbles on the outside of it. And instantly I thought, like, everything that was inside this animal is now gone. All the air is on the outside of it versus when you walk up to a normal animal shot with a broadhead, they usually, you know, they're hissing because they took off running and they built up so much air in their cavity, but the air couldn't escape.
Right.
So, I looked at the pig and I said, oh, you know, great shot, and giving him high fives and stuff and talking to him about the shot again. And we ended up rolling the pig over and noticed that it didn't go through the ribs. At 52 yards, it went through the ribs, then blew the shoulder out from one side. And like I said, the arrow looked like it was going to keep like it was going to keep going. Yeah. So we checked the exit on the other side. And we have pictures on it, I think on our website, where the meat is actually pushed out of the hole, where the broadhead like shoveled it all the way out of the hole and pushed it out of the hide.
Yeah. So it almost sounds like it created that, what you mentioned earlier, from a bullet standpoint, you know, when a bullet goes through something, it creates like a vacuum inside. And then once that pops out the back end, it just, all that stuff just gets blown right out the back end of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, that's what it was. It was actually part of the meat, and some of the shoulder bone was sticking out of the hole.
Gotcha.
And that's when I knew that this thing is hammering animals not only as bad as what it's doing to a metal drum, but the hole size relative to the shape of the broadhead. And like I said, you can see them all over our website. That's the first time, obviously, we shot an animal with one, but our broadhead is technically a three blade, right? Like, it's, you look at it and say, okay, if this had a different point or whatever, and the blades came out and there's nothing attached to the back, it would be a three blade. But why is this broadhead punching holes, you know, a true circular hole almost out of everything that it hits?
Yeah.
You will still get, you know, down the road, we notice that you'll still get some of those triangular holes, but it's never the field point with razor blades. And on most animals, especially when on the exit, it'll be almost a true circular hole.
Yeah. Okay. So, did you take that pig back and like rinse it out and just like really inspect the wound channel from that hog?
Oh, for sure. It was really, really cool because we were, my buddy was under, we had him sign an NDA along with our other buddy that now actually lives up here in Idaho. They signed an NDA. They both signed an NDA because obviously we're still in prototype. Not that I wouldn't trust them, but I knew that they had some individuals with them that it was kind of like their first time hunting. And so obviously, you know, when you're trying to design stuff, you just, you know, you don't want anything to leak out or anybody to say anything that could compromise or, you know, or bring to light someone else coming up with something similar or you know, or anything like that. Basically, you know, stealing your ideas.
Yeah.
So not that I didn't trust those guys, because I love those guys to death. One of them's our really good friend up here now, but it was one of those things where you just, you know, you don't know, in the presence of unfamiliar friends, you just don't know who you're talking to. So there was two younger, I say kids, because I'm in my, you know, 40s now, but they're probably in their 20s. And there, it was their first, one of their first time hog hunting. So they actually helped us, skin it. We taught them how to like quarter it, where to start cutting and stuff. So that part was super cool to me, cause I love showing people and love educating people about hunting, but they were there to see the process. And one of them made the comment, and he didn't even know we were shooting. He didn't know what we were shooting. He later asked, and my buddy said, hey, we can't tell you, they're testing some products that we can't tell you what we shot it with. And they were fine with it. But one of them made the comment that it looked like a bullet had gone through it.
Yeah.
And the inside, when we opened the, not only the shoulder, the meat that was sticking out, we actually pushed the meat back through the hole. And then when we started skinning the hog out, and took the hide off.
Yeah.
But that's when we inspected the damage, but that was just through the shoulder. Now, when we cut the pig open, it literally looked like a blender went off inside of him. And he wasn't on the ground that long. And the blood shot around the side that was up in the air was absolutely massive. Very similar to when a rifle round goes in, the bloodletting, you know, gets dispersed from that percussion. It was really interesting to see that it still happened with this broadhead.
Yeah. Okay. So destroyed it, right? Did you guys have a name? I mean, did you have Annihilator picked out at this point, or was that further down?
I think by that time, just joking around, I had come up with a name, and I remember Brandon going, dude, that's perfect. That name is perfect for this, for what we know that this head is doing already.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I think nothing official, but we were kind of, yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly when was it, before or after the first kill?
I think it was before, but I remember calling you. It's funny now that he brought that question up, I believe Brandon, I think we talked about it more. I remember calling you and saying that, you know, Lucas shot that pig. And then I told you in the car, hey, he shot it with the Annihilator. And you're like, what? And I said, yeah, I said that Annihilator, it basically did what he said it did. It annihilated that pig.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it did come after that pig. Right after that pig. And then you guys took it out to, not you, but he took it out to Africa and waylaid a bunch of animals out there with, you know, just similar story over and over shooting animals with the shoulder and stuff. And
keep in mind that too, these were not, these heads were right at the cusp of illegal, non-legal. They were 7/8, like literally to the T, to where if you had a 7/8 ring, it would hook up, but just barely. So these were smaller profiles than what we have now.
Gotcha.
Not by a lot, but you know, since then, you know, because ultimately the angles that we wanted were, that's like we were talking about the part of the process for iterations. We didn't have a lot because we knew what this one, the aim was doing. So they said, what can we stretch this to still have the same flight characteristics, same penetration, everything.
Gotcha. All right. So you made a couple tweaks after the slaying, right? So you slayed a whole bunch of animals. You made a couple tweaks to the head and now, I mean, you know, I'm fast forwarding through 2 years here because you guys said you did 2 years worth of testing on this before you brought it to market. I look at this head, and you guys even mentioned it. It doesn't look like the other heads, right? And people in the hunting industry, specifically the hunting industry, from my experience, they look at something that's different and instantly say, well, that's not going to work. They don't know any, you know, any science behind it. They just look at something and it's not what they've been doing for the past 20 years. So they hate it or don't like it.
Yep. I'll let Brendan speak onto the part where I had to, you know, like if he was leashed, you know, like I'd have to, and he had a collar on him, I'd have to pull him back because the comments when we first launched for like 2 months, you know, 2 months right before hunting season, we just had to bite our tongues because it's so outside the scope. And you know, that's what one of the reasons why we won that award at the ATA show for best new innovation in 2020. It's so outside the scope of what a broadhead is supposed to do and what it looks like. We literally flipped the industry upside down on its head and induced drag on the part of the projectile where every single other manufacturer got rid of it and tried to, you know, made theirs as sleek and small and fast and shiny as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk on that. I mean, talk about the obstacles that you guys had to face when introducing this product to I'll call the hunting industry a set in its ways industry.
Oh yeah. That would be an understatement.
Yeah.
So we pushed this out on social and we showed people kind of just the, literally just the tip, right? and tried to really kind of mask the bell shape behind it and created a lot of interest, man. It was really exciting because just all the comments, people were kind of like, oh my gosh, what is this? And really excited about it. And once we launched it and we actually showed people that bill in the back, literally maybe like 10% of people were like, oh my God, that's incredible. How cool, blah, blah, blah. 90% of people were like, what the hell is that? That's not going to kill a squirrel. That's not going to fly. Oh, 7/8 cut diameter. Why would you make a smaller broadhead? That's a backward step in innovation. What a waste of time. You know, just like everybody said that, whether they worked in the industry, whether they like, but then, but no one had held one in their hand.
Right.
So we go to Reading with some prototypes. We weren't selling, but we showed the industry. And if you know anything about the Reading shoot, it's the best shooters in the world from all over the world. And you get the best eyeballs. That's why we went there. And, everybody there was like, holy shit, this thing's awesome. Yeah. Like I know it's small, but like, look at that back shape. That's going to do some devastation. So anytime somebody actually held it in their hand and saw it, we definitely didn't have the negative response. The only thing we had to overcome was look how small that is, yeah. You know? And so it was more curiosity. It's like, well, you know, a well-placed, everybody knows, you know, oh, well, a well-placed shot's going to kill an animal. Right. And what people don't understand though is, you kill animals through hemorrhaging and blood loss with any archery component. That's how Indians killed animals with a bow, right? We add steps to lethality that other broadhead shapes cannot accomplish because of that bell-shaped curve. And that is the part that has not been adopted. And we continually, even today, that is part of the hurdle that we have to continually overcome every time we talk to a person who hasn't seen the reviews or looked at them or personally taken animals with them. And especially the second you start killing animals more than one or two, and you're like, hey, I've got a larger sample size, you start to see that, you know, they didn't really make it over 40 yards on any of them. You know, if you take 10 animals down, you know, that's a good sample size to say, hey, my shot placement was kind of in 10 different areas, right?
Yeah.
And wow, look, the same result. Any other broadhead's going to knock an animal down and they're not going to go 20 if you take the perfect hard shot, right? But every other broadhead, that's going to be like a 2 out of 10 where they dropped within sight. You know, with our head, it's going to be the vast majority of the time because of that shape. And that's the thing that people don't understand, because it's difficult for them to wrap their brain around it. And because large sample sizes takes time.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that we pride ourselves on. And we challenge any hunter out there with their favorite broadhead to go put this thing to the test. And so far we haven't found anybody yet that can call BS on it. Right.
Yeah.
And they won't be able to, because the reality is the reviews are already out there, guys. It's like, we've got over 60,000 shooters now. So we can get into that and talk about, you know, the market validation today. And, all that to say is, anytime we meet a new person, that's the hurdle we got to jump over on a regular basis. And it's interesting too. It's even industry people, like big time industry people, that come look at it and they're like, ah, yeah, but they just don't. It's almost like they just can't believe it. You know, they can't wrap their brain around it and trust it. And but ultimately,
those are also the same people that can't give their honest opinion about something. Because the majority of the hunting industry people are paid by other companies, and the old hunting industry. Like for me, I'm very confident. I shoot Wasp. Wasp pays me money. I advertise their broadheads. I've shot lots of animals with their broadheads. They kill shit, right? Bad shots, good shots, whatever, right? But I can honestly say, because I feel positive about this, that I look at this and I am very intrigued about the science and the design that goes into this head and why it's creating the holes that it is. Meanwhile, other people, they can't say that shit, right? They have to bite their tongue, because God forbid that gets back to someone and they lose what they've built, and they, oh my God, I can't do that. So they'll either do one of two things, and that's talk shit on a product, or just say, I don't know about it, until you guys start writing big checks.
Right. Oh, for sure. Let me interject real quick too, going back to what Brandon was saying about that Reading shoot.
Yeah.
And since then, this has happened multiple times, and by the same people in a different industry. And I'll speak on that in a second. But when we were at Reading, this is the first time it's happened. We had a guy come up, and I want to say he was from, I think, over by like New York, and flew out, like Brandon was saying, these people come out for this Reading shoot from all over the world. I believe he's from New York or over there on the Northeast Coast someplace. And he grabbed our broadheads, totally unassuming. I looked at him. I've been doing the NFA stuff for a long time, so I know all the big wigs and all the big shooters and stuff. So he didn't seem like, one of those guys or anything. He just sat there and held our broadhead, and a couple other people had come to our booth in the meantime, and he was just looking at it and holding it up and I think he put one on his arrow. And then he set it down, and he said that he was an engineer. And I forgot if he was I believe he said he was a mechanical engineer for some company back there. And he said, I love to shoot archery. And he said, I can tell you right now that there's nothing out there that I've ever seen that looks like this. And he was basically like, can I order these right now? And we're like, oh, sweet. This is, I think Brandon, he was like one of the first takers. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, when you guys launch, call me. Yeah. But he was so blown away. The guy stood in our booth for like an hour and a half. And this is the first time it's happened with an engineer, and also the first time where someone has walked up. And I remember the guy telling them, basically looking at them and saying, you have no idea what you're looking at. Like, and he told a couple guys, hey, I'm an engineer, and the design of this thing is off the charts. And Brandon can speak to when it happened again with his father-in-law and a friend of his father-in-law up here in Idaho. That was the second time it happened.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, and that's the
time check before we go any further here. How are we doing on time, Dan?
Yeah, dude. I mean, we can talk as long as you want. I mean, I like these conversations because you've had a couple aha moments throughout the course of this project, right? And so you're getting this validation from the concept to from the idea to the prototype to now starting to get validated through, It's cool to see. What I like to see in any product is I don't care about the dipshits, right? Dipshits are going to be dipshits. They're going to say things that don't make sense because they're uneducated. But that one engineer comes up to your booth and he grabs your head and he looks at it and he goes, damn, right? Yeah. And as an educated person, I'm not.
Understands the mechanics
exactly.
And physics of an object. Yeah,
exactly. That's all I would need. And I'd be like, now it's time to market, right? Now it's time to figure out how to explain this thing to the masses. And that's hard sometimes because some people are idiots.
Oh, like Brandon was saying, it still is. We just got back from Park City, the TAC in Utah. And guys haven't heard of us, and then you explain it to them. And our pitch now is so refined that before it took like we were talking with somebody yesterday on a call, and we would discuss our broadhead, and by the time we got done talking to them,
all right. So now you guys started getting validation, not from the dipshits of the world, but from the credible, the credible sources, the people, the engineers and whatnot. And so now it's time to get back into this business mode, right? Where in order to make money, we have to sell this and market it and put our put the pedal to the metal, so to speak. What did that look like?
I mean, gosh, there's a lot that goes into that, right? To actually take a product to market. When we were at I remember at Reading, Michael will tell you, I was very stressed out because while we were there, we were also going live with our website so that we could actually start taking orders. And it was a lot of work to get that thing turned on and ready to rock and make sure that your messaging is correct. And how do you talk about, you know, this new product that, you know, people don't really understand. you know, anytime you come out and say, hey, we just reinvented the wheel and it's freaking awesome. And it's in all of our testing, we've pretty much destroyed everybody else. People go, yeah, right.
They don't even look at the science.
Yeah, they don't even look at it. And they go, you guys are a bunch of prideful, arrogant assholes. Yeah. And that wouldn't kill a squirrel.
Yeah.
So it's fine tuning your messaging. It's, of course, creating all the channels of which you have to speak to your customers. It's finding your ideal customers. That's, of course, the pricing model that you're going to figure out. It's who in the industry can you connect to continue that story of validation, not just, you know, random engineers that you meet, which, man, we met a lot of them. And then it's also like, what can you do from a certified science standpoint that you can provide as validation? And so we went down that process and kind of answered all those questions, right? And some of that was done during the R&D, some of that was done before launch, during launch and after launch, right? I remember Micah and I, this is kind of going back to just the validation steps. We sent some heads over to Hawaii, they went to Africa, they went all over the place, and you know, I had killed an elk with them. And anyways, the one consistent thing that we saw was that animals would be shot in whatever that location would be of the shot placement, but there would be internal hemorrhaging and blood displaced all over inside, internally and externally in that animal, but more internally is the thing that caught our eye. And I remember being in Hawaii and our buddy Evan shot a axis deer, you know, they're not huge animals, but he shot a doe. And he's pretty low poundage guy, like 50-pound bow, 55-pound bow, something like that. And shoots through both shoulders on a doe and complete pass through. We open this doe up and she's bloodshot all the way back to her ass, from the shoulder to her ass, to her hindquarter. And I remember looking at Micah going, what the hell? Like, how does that happen? We have to go get somebody to tell us why this is happening. Like, we have theories on it, right? But we need to actually go understand why. And so we went and hired a third-party engineering company to really help us understand the why behind the what. Now, I'm not going to tell you this was a complete analysis. This was just one step in the process, right? To help us identify what we were seeing. And so, you know, we talk about the engineers that walk up to our booth, and my favorite personally was not the engineers. It was actually the EMTs and anybody who was in the military, because they'd look at us and they go, that's a sucking chest wound. And we go, yep, pretty much. The only broadhead ever designed to create sucking chest wounds and kill animals faster. And you didn't have to say anything beyond that, because they go, yep, I get it. We did a fluid dynamics analysis in this very expensive software to help us understand what was happening. And going back to the conversation of the pulling and the pushing of air and trapping and training air, and we were able to validate some of those things. We learned out of my arrow setup at the time, which was around a 450 grain arrow flying about 270 feet per second, that we created almost a 6-inch high pressure wave on impact, followed by a near 8-inch low tension pocket. So it's that high pressure, like hit them like a hammer, and then you're sucking in atmospheric pressure all the way through that animal and pushing out on two sides. And so once we released that information, I think that went right over people's heads.
Yeah.
They didn't understand that either, but at least it was available. And then you start talking about anything related to air in an animal and how to induce that. And you know what everybody says? One of two things. That's hydrostatic shock. Wow, how cool is that? Or you're trying to claim that you're hitting an animal like a rifle round. There's zero chance that that's true.
Yeah.
So they're in one of two camps. And I think we had to learn that it's a very fine line to walk, because we are not a bullet shooting at supersonic speeds. And we've never claimed that, but we've always been something more than your traditional broadhead. So how do you tell that story? And so what we've learned is we truly cavitate. We've proven cavitation, and we'll talk about cavitation in the future and have the certified science behind it. This was the CFD analysis that we did was just a step, and we've already proven it. But we're actually going to invest some resources to see if we actually can prove supercavitation, which we already know is possible. It's identified, and there is certified science that exists today through universities as low as 150 to 170 feet per second that you can actually supercavitate, not through a bow, but just at that speed through objects in water and things like that, and wind tunnels and et cetera. But all that to say is, we knew something was different. We validated that something was different. You talk to the engineers, they look at it and they go, that's different. You talk to the EMTs and, you know, the people in the military and anybody who really understands lethality and how people have wounds and wound channels. And it's like, yeah, I get it. There's no pitch really necessary to say. And then you go to the industry people who have been doing this for super long and they all roll their eyes and go, yeah. And, you know, because guess what, guys? And this is a sad statement to say, and I'm going to tell you this. Like, I have no apologies in saying this. I'm saddened by the fact that the archery industry in general is so opinion-based and so driven by marketing. Arrows have been around forever, and yet very few people know how they actually fly. You walk around, even at ATA, which is sad to say, and you go – and I'm not going to – I don't want to have conjecture or speculation, but that's just been my experience so far when talking to people is there's not a lot of certified science in our industry. You want to go pull up bullet ballistics and talk about rifle hunting and stuff. Man, there's so much science. It's unbelievable. It's irrefutable. You start talking about how an arrow flies and broadhead shapes and drag coefficients and measuring things out of lab radars and different shapes and what a true ballistic trajectory is and energy transfer into the target and front of center and spine and what veins to shoot and why different shapes of a vein is going to, you know, make your arrow do something different. And guess what? You're going to get about, you know, 1,000 different responses from 1,000 different people.
Yeah.
And that's sad to say that that's not, there's no like repository for data that says, though, this is accurate, this is true. And I think some people have tried, you know, Ed Ashby Foundation, hats off to them for investing marketing dollars and dollars into their data and science, you know, from all of their sample sizes. And, you know, I don't agree with everything that they say, you know, especially things like mechanical advantage, because you know, to me, that just creates more deflection. But you know, I like the direction we're going, but all that to say is when a company wants to start doing things like that, they're talking to customers and people in the industry that aren't really ready to adopt that because they're not used to it yet. It's not the norm. The norm in our industry is not to provide certified science and have conversations about it respectfully with each other. The norm in our industry is to have a, you know, who's got something bigger and better. Yeah. And it's all, you know, and it's speculation, you know, typically, and then who paid who what.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest broadhead companies on the market was basically created by throwing millions of dollars at celebrities and telling them, you know, hey, this, and then they, you know, has some guys like, it's like throwing an axe through an animal, blah, and no one questions how it works. They just say, yeah, this guy right here, he knows what he's talking about. And so when I see something like that happen these days, that actually is a big turnoff for me. I actually question the functionality of that product when their marketing strategy is to get a whole bunch of, you know, video camera people and tell me, hey, or try to tell me that this is the best product for it. As a serious deer hunter, they lose credibility with me. So in your guys' opinion though, you still have to play the game a little bit, right?
Yep.
So how do you, like, what's the approach now? Is it science-backed research and data, or is it, hey, this kill shit dead? Like, how do you combine those two to reach the right audience?
It's a little bit of both, and it depends on where we're at. And just being candid with you, industry is still not ready for certified science. And so if you want to be the best selling broadhead, unfortunately, you've got to focus on this kills shit and you got to dumb it down. And you got, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that in a, Micah and I learned early on, like we went to the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, and it was, man, so many people. It's unreal.
Yeah.
The amount of business you can do there. And it's so fun because we get to talk to hunters all day long about killing shit, right? Like our job doesn't suck. And, you know, we talked to guys, and I remember the first year we were there, we've now been there twice, should have been there three times, but they canceled it due to Rona, unfortunately, year two. But our first year there, Mike and I were laughing because after day four, we started to see this pattern. And the pattern was, is Micah and I would go into the CFD analysis and all the science and everything behind it, and cutting surface area matters more than cut diameter and blah, blah, blah. And people would really engage with us. They would love to hear it, and they would listen, and they would, but they're, you could see it on their face. Like you could literally read their face. There would be a moment in time where all of a sudden their eyes would glaze over and you could see that their brain started hurting.
I'm back in science and class again. Boring. Yeah, exactly. Boring.
Like, yep. Exactly. And well, they thought it was super cool and they're like, yeah, this is awesome. But like, I didn't come here for, you know, to get edumacated.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys got free koozies?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I can't. Yeah, exactly. I wanted a sticker, bro.
Yeah.
But you know, by the time we were done with them, we could tell we were actually hurting ourselves by giving them the truth.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that like we lie today. I just mean that as we have to dumb it down, and it's all about your selling pitch. If you want to be the best selling broadhead, what we learned is we've got to treat our, we got to find our ideal customer, and we got to talk to them in a way that they want to be spoken to. And that's not always easy to do. And whether that's in person or through digital or whatever it is, there's a balance with it all. And you could tell there's guys that come up that know, they know about walkback tuning. They know about bear shaft tuning. They're the ones that tune their own bows, and you can talk to those guys more in a technical way. Yeah. Versus the guy that just walks up and goes, man, I just kill shit. I kill 15 animals a year. And you know, I've shot XYZ broadhead and it's always worked for me. What's the point of me changing to your broadhead? And you know, we've got to find that balance. And the balance is this, man. It's like, hey, we're going to out penetrate whatever you currently shoot. It doesn't matter. Name it. We're going to out penetrate whatever you currently shoot. We're going to fly extremely accurate out to very long ranges if you choose to want to shoot at long ranges, even if it's just for fun. And we're going to increase lethality and give you steps to the lethality that you can't accomplish with other shapes and designs, because every other design ever in the history of a broadhead has always killed animals through lacerations and hemorrhaging alone. We add the sucking chest wound. You can't argue that. It's infallible. It's you. Go look it up if your readers don't, or if your listeners don't know what that is. You're going to see very clearly that that is a thing. It's real, and it works very well to kill animals faster. And as long as you can do that in something that flies good and is durable, now you've got a great little platform that you can build off of. And so we focus on those four pillars, going back to what Micah said: flight, durability, lethality, and penetration.
And
then we build from there. And if you get a guy that, you know, and then we just show them holes, hole after hole after hole after hole in animals, not just car hoods. You know, car hoods is fun. And I know we're known as like the car hood broadhead guys, you know, people walk around, oh, those are the car hood guys. And it's a little gimmicky and we recognize that, but it's
gimmicks work, man. Gimmicks work.
It is, but it's actually a cool little conversation that I really enjoy talking to people in, because I can give them the quick and dirty, like, yep, it's badass. It annihilates. It puts holes in animals and they're really durable and you're not going to break them conversation, which is like high energy. People love it. Like, oh man, look at it. It went through like double, triple gussets. You're not deflecting. But then I can also show them, especially if we're at an outdoor event and we're letting them shoot through the car hood and it's not just like indoors where we have a car hood. If they're shooting through the car hood, my favorite is, and Michael will tell you this too, is when we go pull the arrow and we ask them, hey, what's the first thing you notice? Everybody says the same thing. Holy shit, my fletchings are still on there and we just shot through steel.
Yeah.
Boom. Let me interject real quick, Brandon. The other side of that too is the guys, and this is very important for what Brandon's speaking on, the guys and gals that shoot through that car hood with us, if they don't recognize the fletching, the first thing they say is, and they're the ones who sometimes it takes the next step of showing them the process before the light bulb goes on. They'll grab the arrow. We let them pull the arrow out and they'll look at the broadhead and they'll be like, oh man, that's stuck in the target. And then we'll say, that's fine. Yeah, I went through it like butter, like it's not there. But more importantly, look at the back end. And then when those people look back to the fletchings, that's when their light bulb goes on, because there's a step in there, like Brandon was saying, when we peel their wigs back, talking to them about the science of the broadhead. When they finally go back and look at the fletchings after the fact of looking how it penetrated, their light bulb also goes on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everyone's different, and how they accept that information is different. And Brandon and I have talked about it, you know, through the years of our pitch. We know where people are starting to fall off the pitch. So we spend more time kind of getting underneath them and then digging the ditch and then peeling, you know, picking them back up to get them on the platform of talking about the broadhead again, because for most people, even though we've been out 4 years now, just about, it's like people still don't understand the technology, and new people, you know, young archers that are getting into it, for them, it's completely outside the scope of anything that they've ever seen.
Yeah. It's almost like taking a smartphone back to the 1950s or something like that and just being like, hey, check this out. In the future, everybody's going to have that. They're going to be like, right. No, they won't.
The cool thing is, you know, when we won that award at the ATA show, Outdoor Life wrote an article on us that said, and it's to this day, I remember it because it fits so well. And it said, the article title was The Annihilator Broadheads, and said, what award we won. And then it said, it's so simple, it's stupid.
Yeah.
But then they went into the science right behind that. And so like to get same thing, it's like to get people to understand it, like think simply, and then we'll give you the science behind it. And once you visualize it, you get it.
And people have to want the science, right? Some people are okay with, hey man, check this broadhead out. It absolutely destroys everything it hits. Oh, cool. I'm sold.
The coolest thing is when you talk to guys, like this weekend, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but Brandon knows who I'm talking about. We talked to a guy that's been around for a long time, has a ton of influence in the industry, has shot the head before, really liked it. When we talked to him at the show, and this is the first time we actually got to meet him face to face and talk to him. I've met him before, but talked to him about the broadhead and what it's doing and what his experience was. He stood in our booth for like 35 minutes and almost, to me, it was kind of cool because it was almost like, to me, it felt like he was just a new person coming at the broadhead.
Yeah.
And the dude has a ton of following.
Yeah. 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 That's great. So, you know, we've kind of gone through the whole steps here. And so one of the questions that I always like to ask is, so there's some guys listening out here, right? We've talked about the science. We've talked about the fact that it reduces the drag on the arrow, the strength to penetrate a car hood, all the stuff that we've talked about today. And there's a guy out there who is going, well, maybe I should think about Annihilator. What message do you have for him or her?
Well, I'll tell him, and Micah, you pipe in too, about what you would tell a guy there. But I tell guys this. If you want to kill animals for the rest of your life and be in an ethical way, and you want to reduce the time of death, you want to reduce the time of tracking, you want something that's going to give you a more consistent result with a larger sample size, and you're not a total bloodluster in terms of like we talk to guys all the time, you know, they would rather have red carpet for a mile than no blood for the first 20 yards, even though they're standing over their animal. So I would tell guys this: if you can handle that right there, because you're going to have less blood than a mechanical on average, I would say, with any fixed blade head on the outside of an animal, because you don't have the capillary refill that a 3-inch cutting mechanical would have. And for the time it takes for that blood to come out, typically the animal's already dead with the Annihilator. So we have great blood channels when you hit something that's inside the thoracic cavity of the animal, that actually produces blood, but it's a fixed blade head. So if you're a listener and you're talking about mechanical versus fixed blade in general is going to be a little different. It's not a 4-inch slash, right? So if you fall in that category where you want to be standing over your animal more consistently, you want to take ethical shots and you want that animal to die as fast as possible, there's no broadhead in the world that will kill an animal as fast as the annihilator consistently across a large sample size. And we have thousands of reviews to establish that and prove that.
Gotcha.
And to me, that's the pitch. And if a guy can understand that, you're going to win him for life.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes great sense.
And even, I mean, Brandon hit the nail on the head, for sure. And that's what we pride ourselves more than anything out of those four pillars. Like we discussed earlier, the last one, the lethality is tried and true to Brandon and I's hearts. We want, when people come up and say, man, this thing, my animal, I've never seen it die so fast. I've never seen it expire so fast. And as any bow hunter out there, as even a gun hunter, if you're going to take the life of anything that's living, you should try to end that life as fast as you can. And for me, what I've noticed is when we're shooting stuff and talking to friends and we're eating pig meat or eating whatever, they die so fast, they don't have a chance to build up all the adrenaline in the animal. The animal doesn't taste gamey. We're in similar situations. You'll get that, you know, the animal's not standing on its feet for 150 yards, running all over the place. It's dead in 40 yards, like stone dead. So to have that happen, as the fourth pillar in what we were talking about earlier, you know, flight, penetration, lethality, you know, the durability, and then the lethality, to have that as the last one, but that's not the last one in how we judged it. That's actually the first one. Can we actually harvest an animal faster than anything else out there? And the merging of, like what we said, minus some of the technical differences, what a broadhead does, what a bullet does by moving air, by bringing those two together, Brandon and I honestly feel that we've flipped the industry upside down, and that's not to brag, but flip it upside down to deliver bow hunters something that they've never experienced before.
Yeah. Hey, man, that's a great pitch. If people want to find out more information about annihilator broadheads and the science that we've talked about today and all the other info that you guys talked about, where should we send them?
Go ahead, Brian.
Annihilatorbroadheads.com.
Yep.
Perfect.
There's in our navigation, there's a button that says Why Annihilator. There's a great little PDF there that people can just download and look at. That really summarizes everything that we said. I don't want to say concisely because it is definitely a read, but it does highlight the science, the validation of the science, and it talks about each one of those pillars specifically. And so that's a great place to start, you know, to really deep dive on Annihilator. So, and if you want to just see dead shit, there's lots of videos on our website too.
There you go. There you go. The dead shit is important too. So
you follow us. We're on social, you know, Annihilator Broadheads. You know, feel free to look us up. We normally get back to people on emails, you know, pretty good. Obviously, we don't have a large crew working behind the scenes as far as who's answering those. We tell people not to flood them if there's something specific, you know, related to a question about, you know, what they have or their setup or whatever. You can go to info@annihilatorbroadheads.com. If they have any of these guys that are listening that have shop owners or work for a shop, you can go to sales@annihilatorbroadheads.com. We just brought on a sales guy who's handling all our wholesale accounts. So a lot of dealers getting set up. Our following is growing leaps and bounds now on social. And the coolest thing that Brandon and I pride ourselves on, besides what we designed the broadhead for, is the fact that unlike most companies, and like I said, not knocking broadhead companies at all, and going back kind of piggybacking on what you said, Dan, about paying people, we have not spent a dollar on marketing since we launched this company. Up until we just did paid ads and stuff just recently, within the last couple months. So for 3 years, this broadhead has grown organically. We bit our lip and let people say what they want. But all of our customers that are out there speak insanely high of us. They're diehards. Their friends are diehards. And anybody that wants to join the Annihilator Nation, jump on.
Perfect. Well, gentlemen, appreciate your time today. Thanks for hopping on, and good luck putting some holes in some animals this fall.
Sounds good, Dan. We appreciate it, man.
Yep. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it, man. For sure.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.